Today, the need to join the dots. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Well, it's Philosophical Sunday, and I wanted to remind you of John Donne's quote, "No man is an island entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. If a clod be washed away by the sea, Europe is the less." And he went on to say, "Never send to know for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee." Now, this is very relevant given the current situation with the virus, insofar that all of the spiel has been vaccine coming, everything's going to be fine, borders will reopen, and we'll click back to normal. Except, I'm not sure it's quite that simple. The Centre for Economic Policy Research recently published a paper entitled "The Economic Costs of Inequitable Vaccine Distribution Across the World." And it was a well-researched piece by a number of preeminent experts. And it ran along these lines. Countries around the world are beginning to vaccinate their populations against COVID-19. But they calculate the global economic costs from the absence of an equitable distribution of vaccines, with a focus on international trade and production linkages, is huge. Under a scenario where advanced economies are vaccinated universally within 4 months in 2021, but only 50% of the population is vaccinated in emerging markets and developing economies by early 2022, they calculate the costs to be perhaps as high as $3.8 trillion. And up to 49% of those costs will be borne by advanced economies. Now, of course, the COVID-19 pandemic had a drastic impact on 2020. The updated IMF October 2020 forecasts expected a contraction of 3.5% in 2020. And this particular paper looked at the linkages between international trade and production and calculated the global economic costs that would arise in the absence of equitable distributions of vaccine. And so, leveraging off John Donne, they say no economy is an island. The economic interdependencies of countries imply that the economic drag on one country has immediate and grave consequences for others. And the economic losses of the pandemic can only be mitigated through multilateral coordination, ensuring the equitable access of vaccines, tests, and therapeutics. One of their key findings is that advanced economies will still suffer from the economic costs of the pandemic, even if they effectively vaccinate their populations and totally contain the pandemic. Those costs stem from their trade linkages with unvaccinated countries. The trade linkages lead to a decline in exports to unvaccinated countries or in imports from unvaccinated countries. Both are amplified through international and domestic input and output linkages. And of course, we are a very much connected place now around the world. The decline in exports of final and intermediate goods reflect the fact that unvaccinated countries still suffer from low domestic demand at home and cannot buy as many goods and services from advanced economies. And similarly, the declines in imports of final and intermediate goods from emerging countries reflect the lower levels of production in these unvaccinated countries. Since such goods are inputs to the production in advanced economies in certain sectors and sectors are linked to each other, the costs spread through the economies of the advanced sector as well. So in the short term, they say, global supply chains are fixed under price stickiness. So there's really no reallocation of labour across sectors, or indeed substitution between intermediate inputs. They used pre-pandemic trade and production network data from 2019. So their findings deliver upper bound estimates on the global costs of insufficient vaccinations in emerging countries going forward for 2021. And they obtain those estimates by linking the existing trade and production networks with an epidemiological model. Country-specific infection dynamics determine the extent of demand and supply shocks, and that's true both domestically and internationally. And so the empirical framework was calibrated to 65 countries and 35 sectors, and it implies that the economic costs are proportional to the openness of countries' economies. Now, they concluded that their research demonstrates the importance of making the vaccine globally available, not from a moral standpoint, but from an economic one, by illustrating the large economic costs in the absence of global vaccinations. Ironically, a significant proportion of those costs will be borne by the advanced economies, despite the fact that they might vaccinate most of their citizens by, say, the summer of 2021. This is because advanced economies are tightly connected to unvaccinated trading partners that consist of a large number of emerging economies. Thus, the devastating economic conditions in these countries under the ongoing pandemic can cause a non-negligible drag on advanced economic growth as well. Even though advanced economies' relative costs are less than that of emerging economies as a percentage of their GDP, their larger sizes imply that they might bear up to 50% of the total global costs. And within the group of advanced economies, the relative costs increase proportionally to their exposure to unvaccinated trade partners. And this underscores something which both the World Health Organization and the European Commission have already said, that no one of us will be safe until everyone is safe. And so this is true not only from a health perspective, but also from an economic perspective. Now, David Crow, back in January, wrote a very important piece in The Age entitled "The Answer is No, Borders to Stay Closed Despite Huge Vaccination Program." And of course, he was referring to Australia. And he wrote, "A new warning against overseas travel has sparked calls for billions of dollars in federal aid for the tourism industry as the government prepares to continue substantial curbs on international border crossings for most of this year. Australians are being told to expect the border ban to continue despite a mammoth vaccination scheme because scientists do not yet know how effective the new vaccines will be in slowing the spread of the virus." Scientists told the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age that the international borders will have to remain largely closed because of the risk of travellers spreading COVID-19 even after they have taken a vaccine. Health Department Secretary Brendan Murphy warned against forecasting beyond 3 months during the pandemic, but said the answer is no when asked on ABC TV if there would be widespread overseas travel later this year. "I think we'll go most of this year with still substantial border restrictions," he said. "Even if we have a lot of the population vaccinated, we don't know whether that will prevent transmission of the virus, and it's likely that quarantine will continue for some time." Professor Murphy said that the plan was to go as safely and as fast as we can with the vaccine rollout and then consider the next phase. Tourism and Transport Forum Chief Executive Margie Osman said the government message was yet another blow, even though the industry accepted the federal health advice. Ms. Osborne said the industry would need a pay packet support exercise to ride out the crisis, and said the solution could be similar to the JobKeeper wage subsidy, which is due to stop at the end of March after $101.3 billion in payments. "We cannot recover without international borders being opened at the appropriate time," she said. "And we cannot survive unless the issues around domestic borders are sorted out and there is a uniform set of triggers, a uniform set of responses, and a uniform definition of hotspots around the country." The tourism industry estimates 60 to 70% of revenue comes from international visitors, and a Chinese tourist spends around $8,000 on a visit, compared to an Australian traveller spending around $1,500 on a domestic trip. The tourism sector estimates the industry would normally post sales of around $5 billion over the summer, but has already gone about $3 billion of that so far, in part because the states had increased uncertainty for Australians about sudden border closures. And the Victorian branch of Tourism Accommodations Australia said 40% of Melbourne's tourism usually came from international travellers, highlighting the cost to jobs. Continued uncertainty regarding international travel should lead Australians to consider the opportunity to explore their own backyard, said General Manager Dougal Hollis. And the Australian Tourism Industry Council Executive Director Simon Westaway said employers had to accept the prospect of a hard-locked border for all of this year. And Mr. Westaway said open domestic borders were a must when the international curbs were so strict, and that companies needed frank engagement with the government. And in a separate warning about overseas arrivals, Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews said there was little prospect of international students arriving this year in large numbers. Tens of thousands of international students coming back here is going to be incredibly challenging, if not impossible, during this year, he said. Now, of course, the government is planning to offer the Pfizer vaccine to 5 million people, including healthcare workers and older Australians, and to offer the AstraZeneca vaccine to 25 million people later. The programme will start on Monday. But once again, we can see that this is not a straightforward situation. The vaccine does not automatically reopen the borders. And just to make the linkage even more explicit, Domain published an article today saying property prices in university suburbs are tipped to keep falling. Apartment prices in suburbs that rely heavily on university students could feel downward pressure for some time after recording steep falls in 2020, property analysts say. Domain's latest house price report shows many of the biggest falls in unit prices over the 12 months to December 2020 were in suburbs that typically attract large numbers of international students who want to live close to campus. Suburbs close to universities include Baldwin and Carlton saw median unit prices fall by 26.7% and 20.5% respectively. In Clayton, near Monash University, house prices fell by 11.1% and unit prices fell by 5.9%. Even when international students can return to Australia, some experts believe it might be some time before apartment prices in some areas recover. Angie Zigomanis, director of the research and strategy at Charter Creek Cramner, said the speed with which those unit prices will recover will depend on how quickly Australia reopens its borders and whether universities will remain as reliant on international students for revenue. If the borders remain closed for another 12 months, the apartment market in some of those suburbs close to universities will remain challenged, he says. While the vacancy rates are so high, they are just not holding any appeal for investors. There is no demand for them, he said. And Mr. Zigomanis said the student apartment market could be further impacted longer term if international students don't return in large numbers when borders reopen. The recovery of that particular market depends on the speed with which international borders open up again, but also on the willingness or appetite of universities to take on international students at the same rate that they did pre-COVID. International students paid fees worth around $10 billion in 2019, about a quarter of all universities' revenue, up from 10% in 2000, according to Commonwealth figures. But with the global pandemic exposing the risks associated with such a heavy reliance on international students for revenue, and online education tipped to be a long-lasting effect of COVID-19, some fear the demand for student apartments may never return to pre-COVID levels. In the same way that remote working has driven growing numbers of city dwellers to make a tree change and commute to the office from regional Victoria once or twice a week, increasing numbers of students from regional Victoria are likely to choose to stay at home and commute to the city as more teaching is performed online. There's no question that changing models around teaching and remote learning may also impact demand for student departments, Mr. Zygomanis said. Domain senior research analyst Dr. Nicola Powell said apartment markets that are tied closely to universities are likely to be impacted longer term by domestic students who have altered their decisions about where they might want to live since COVID. While for some, university may always be an opportunity to fly the nest, there might be others who might now choose to go to university but stay at home and commute from the country when they need to, she said. And Dr. Powell said that as long as vacancy rates in areas such as Melbourne CBD and Clayton near Monash University remain high, they will remain unattractive to investors and place downward pressure on prices. At the moment, we've got vacancy rates of 11.8% in Melbourne City and 4.9% out in Monash, which are some of the highest in Greater Melbourne, Dr. Powell said. We are also seeing some reduction in sale prices, which is reflecting the retreat in investor activity we saw in 2020. Until we see the rental market in those areas return, then investors are going to continue to be deterred from investing in these disrupted rental markets. However, Dr. Powell is confident demand from international students will return once international borders reopen and drive recovery in those markets skewed towards students. While I think we might see a bit of a change in sentiment from domestic students, I think once that flow of international students returns, those rental markets will snap back near to where they were and vacancy rates will continue to decline from their peak. And Dr. Powell said the lure of Australia will remain strong among international students once the pandemic is over and the vaccine has been rolled out, not just because of our great universities, but because the way the pandemic has been handled here has been, quote, world class. A Melbourne-based demographer, Simon Kustemaker, from the Demographics Group, also believes international students will drive a correction in prices for student-focused accommodation in the longer term, sooner or later. He said international students will come back to Melbourne because the demand for a high-quality English-speaking in-person university experience is not going to shrink while we've got those growth economies in Asia, he said. However, he thinks that there is going to be a significant short-term risk if international borders don't reopen in time to replace the current crop of international students who are likely to upsize from student-style apartments or return home once they graduate in 2 to 3 years. As long as there is a global pandemic that stops people migrating across the world, those inner suburbs of Melbourne and those university-tied suburbs that depend on a constant refreshing of that student population remains a concern, he said. Many apartments that are currently rented to international students could be empty in 3 years' time if new international students don't come in, and that will cause prices to plummet for those smaller one or two bedroom apartments. But we would see those price falls confined to just those smaller apartments because demand for those larger apartments and houses, even in those university suburbs, are just growing and growing, even in a pandemic, he said. And Geelong, home to Deakin University, is a good example of how the reduction in student populations affects only certain portions of the market. Brendan Turia from Fresh Property Management in Geelong says that while rental demand for homes in Geelong is going nuts due to increased migration largely from Melbourne, demand for rooming houses, which are large homes with up to 10 to 12 rooms and normally rented individually for students, has plummeted. For normal housing, it's gone crazy. People are offering more rent and offering to pay 4 to 6 months in advance because the competition is so high, he said, who also owns several rooming houses of his own. But with the student rooming houses, we're leasing rooms for $20 to $40 a week, less than normal. Not only are there fewer international students, but the domestic students aren't willing to commit to a lease at the moment because they don't know how much they will actually be required on campus and how much learning will be online, he said. And he went on to say that the other likely long-term impact the current pandemic is that investors will be more likely to diversify their investment portfolio and not just rely on one sector of the market, such as students, for rental income. And so let me come back to John Dunn. No man is an island. And you can see here how the impact of the pandemic, the shutting of the borders, the vaccine, and all of those things spill on to things like unit prices and house prices in certain suburbs. And it's this complex interrelationship that we need to understand, because frankly, a lot of the claims about how things are going to play out are so naive. The fact is, things are way more connected than we think. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.